Good morning. My name is Cindy, and I am definitely a compulsive eater. Thank you so much, Judy, for inviting me to tell my story, share my experience, strength, and hope today. Thank you to everyone who puts this meeting on every day. It has been a life changer for me to start coming to this meeting. I just started actually this year, and it has been I found my people who are waking early in the morning. I just really feel like I connect with people who tell their story here too and share their experience. So I can share full disclosure. In January of this year, I was asked actually to tell my story in a face-to-face meeting that's here locally. And I immediately told my friend, no, I'm not going to do it because I get so nervous. That I don't know why. I mean, I really don't. It's my story. Nobody can argue with me, right? But I guess just having the microphone for up to 20 minutes, it's a little intimidating for me. So I told her no, and I happened to be at a recovery retreat that weekend, and a speaker came in and she shared her story, and she said one of the things that really helped her was when she first came in, she heard the message. If you come into recovery rooms, come all the way in. And when you sit down, sit all the way down. And I had heard that in a way that I'd never heard. Maybe the message was, some other words or something, but for some reason, my higher power was telling me that. So I had thought about saying no to my friend. And I thought, I know when asked for help, I should raise my hand and do that. So I kind of slept on it overnight. And then the next morning, I write in this journal every day that has a little writing prompt in it. And the prompt the next morning was, are you in or are you out? So my higher power definitely has a sense of humor, like connects with me and never gives up on me. And I'm really grateful for that. So when Judy asked me, I remembered that story and like, okay, yeah, I'm in. I will do this. So thank you again for allowing me to do this. So I appreciate that very much, opportunity to share. To qualify, I can remember growing up, as many of us have, in a very dysfunctional home. My mother, I think, was 18 when she had me, and I was a second child. My mother and my father both dropped out of school to get jobs and support the family, which ended up being a family of six. Alcoholism, drug abuse, a lot of fighting, a lot of arguing, throwing things, just complete chaos growing up. And I remember, I don't know how old I was, but maybe four-ish, that age. But I remember sitting under the kitchen table when all this was going on and eating a whole pan of something, a whole pan, like a four-year-old. I mean, it's absolutely, when I see that little child sitting under the table, it just blows my mind that somehow I made this connection of escaping or distracting from what was happening and using food as a something to soothe myself. So my parents at that time, and I've made amends, fast forward many years, we worked through all this, and I understand my parents really truly did the best that they could. So I don't blame them at all, but I think it probably does influence my relationship with food. There was a saying, kids should be seen and not heard at that time. So really not having a voice or having an opinion and just surviving, just doing the best that we could. I don't know, the nature nurture. I don't know if I was born with this disease or I learned it over time. Probably doesn't matter. Definitely the nurture part, the way that I was raised without having the ability or the skills to, say how I feel or what's going on, if I was scared or whatever, that I just never had that as an option. And also at the same time, I'm probably a little predisposed to being thin-skinned and having my feelings hurt and feeling pretty vulnerable. So, I don't know which came first. It probably doesn't matter, but I just learned that food always comforted me. Going to school, elementary school, high school, food was always my comfort. I remember I have many, many memories of, I rode the school bus. I have many memories of standing in line, waiting to get on the bus. And at that point, I would start to romanticize and fantasize about the food that I was going to eat when I got home. And then go home. As soon as I get home, just start eating from the time I got home and dinner and And then even up until I go to bed, I would just eat constantly. It would just be volumes of food because in school, and I've heard this, many people share their story too, just feeling extremely socially awkward, not fitting in, feeling different. And I don't know why, you know, when I look at pictures now, I look back, I'm like, I'm not sure why. I mean, I look pretty normal, fit in, you know, in the classroom pictures and that kind of stuff. But there was something deep inside of me that was broken, that there was something wrong with me, and that I just didn't fit in. Food was always a distraction for me. When I felt uncomfortable in any way, food was always my go-to. I felt real lost and powerless. And so, you know, I just never really learned life skills, maybe that other people learned on how to handle difficult situations or how to fit in. I just was always a wallflower, the introverted, quiet person in the corner. Maybe outside looking in, I'm not sure if anybody else saw that, but I remember feeling that for sure. As a young adult, I did graduate from high school. I did okay. I joined the military, met my husband, we got married, we had two kids. And I think from the outside looking in, it probably looked like a pretty normal home. I was very successful in my career. I even think sometimes maybe as a overcompensating for being successful in my career, because I had this secret life that really I didn't think anyone knew about. I don't think that they did. I was able to go to college. I got my undergrad degree. I got a master's degree in education. You know, everything was trending in a way that you would think would be a successful life. However, the secret life that I had was, you know, hiding food all over my house, volunteering to clean up the kitchen so I could clean off everyone else's plate. I even have memories of, you know, something was thrown away in the trash can that I wanted, and I took it out of the trash can and I ate it. You know, just really a very abnormal relationship with food. The feelings of powerlessness and uncertainty. We moved a lot. Maybe that contributed to part of it. You know, in the military, I lived in Guam, Hawaii. I lived in Japan twice, actually. I speak Japanese. And you would think that all of that, when you paint this picture of this person that's going through life, and so many things are great, so many things are great, but those secrets and that relationship with food was 90% of my life. Maybe no one else knew it, but I definitely knew that there was something there that food somehow just satisfied me and comforted me, and probably even more than that, just distracted me from what was going on whenever I would feel anything really, but especially when I was feeling uncomfortable or scared. I ballooned at one time. I don't know, you know, at that time, this is quite a while ago, maybe in the 80s and the 90s, but I had ballooned up to over 300 pounds at one point. Our scales only went up to 250, so I'm not really sure. I think when I went to the doctors, I was over 300 at one time. So I had gained all this weight. There was absolutely no intimacy in my relationship. I had so much body shame about who I was and how I felt. And ultimately, you know, I ended up getting divorced because of this, because I just could not connect with another person at an intimate level. You know, like I said, my career was all good. Everything was fine at work, you know, in my mind. But, you know, as far as intimacy, it just wasn't there. I wasn't available. I didn't have the capacity to be connected with another person in that way. So my husband left. And you know, I've made amends to him. In fact, we're really good friends now. But I've made amends to him too for just not being available, not being able to show up in that relationship. So looking back now, I can clearly see, you know, I it's not about the food for me. It's really about relationships and the inability at that time to connect with people, the inability to identify even what I was feeling. I just knew it wasn't right, you know, and I just knew that I was really, really broken inside. And food always was my go-to. It was truly my drug of choice, without a doubt. I found OA through some mutual friends in the mid 90s, and I am really, really blessed to have sponsor that took me through the steps. But before she even took me through the steps, it was really important to her, and I'm just so grateful for this, to have me understand that this disease, you know, that three-legged stool, that it's a physical disease, that there's an allergy in my body, that when I eat certain foods, when I eat certain foods, I don't have a full meter. There's never enough. There's absolutely never enough. And once I start eating that, I cannot stop. I just cannot stop. And then, you know, that cycle of, you know, I eat all that, then I have the shame and the guilt, and that vicious cycle of saying I'll never do it again, and then doing it again and over and over and over again. So the physical allergy followed by that mental obsession of just romanticizing food, fantasizing about it, feeling like with my core that that's the solution to making me feel better, and then just that vicious cycle over and over and over and over again. So having me understand that before I even did the steps, I think maybe just made it help me to understand that I'm not so broken that I can't be fixed, and that I can connect with other people who feel that same way. And then the third leg on the stool, you know, the physical, the mental, and then the spiritual malady of our disease. And that's the part I've been focusing on, I think, for, you know, since the mid-90s when I first came in, you know, that there was something disconnected. There was a confusion, or I just don't know all the puzzle pieces, and I have to have them, the control issues. And that falls under that spiritual relationship that I have. I met with my sponsor regularly. We had meetings of other people who were also in OA, and we used you know, all the OA literature. And the one piece of literature I think that helped me the most was the book on abstinence. And it's OA approved literature, and it talks about all the different versions of abstinence that people have. You know, 100 people might have 100 different ideas of what abstinence means in their lives. So she helped me come up with a definition, and I, you know, over the years that definition has changed with time, and you know, that's all fine and good, and it gives me abstinence as one of our tools, gives me a way to connect with my higher power in a way that I can talk to my higher power about what that means, you know, what abstinent means to me today. So I'm very great for that, grateful for that. So what recovery looks like for me today, prayer and meditation is a huge part of my recovery process. I participated. I was actually exposed to two-way prayer through the OA footsteps. I attended there's one at noon Eastern time every day, and it just truly changed my life because I was so hungry and so starving for that personal relationship with a higher power that I'd never had. You know, I had religious training, but I never had that, you know, that connection, that umbilical cord between me and my higher power to work through whatever was coming up. So what two-way prayer truly is a tool for me that's extremely powerful. What I was going to do is just read a short one that I wrote recently, just to give you an idea. Probably most people in here know what two-way prayer is, but maybe somebody doesn't. And it's such a powerful tool for me, I wanted to share it. So this is one that I wrote a little bit ago, a few days ago. It says, I'm really trying to explore what higher power means to me, and how I can connect with my higher power. So I'm trying to reinvent it in a way that works for me today. So I wrote, "Dear higher power, please help me explore all the ways you show up in my life today. Help to remove old, outdated versions of who I think you are. Help me to be willing to remember the why I'm motivated to live in recovery." So then the two-way prayer is, "Your higher power, my higher power answers back to me." So and then I write what I hear. So my higher power said, "My dearest Cindy, I am as close to you as your next breath. You can see me easily in nature. Look for me. I am the tree, the sun, the sky, nighttime darkness, and most intimately, I'm in your heart, your spirit, and in the people around you. I don't care what you call me. In fact, don't lock me in a box or a definition. All that is way too limiting. What I do want you to know and understand is I got you. You are never alone. At any moment, pause, close your eyes, and feel my presence. If you had all the answers, your head would explode. Stay connected to my energy, and together we will experience change, transformation, and the various highs and lows together. Walking this path with me will help you do you, live authentically with a reinvented sense of adventure. Our hope and faith in recovery is contagious, and now we can share our journey with others. So, I do that pretty much every day. I have this conversation with my higher power, and it's encouraging, it's coaching, it's mentoring, it's like getting to the core of that spiritual malady that helps me stay abstinent just one day at a time. I'm just so grateful for that tool. So, and to that specifically, that meeting that helped me so much. Writing is like breathing for me, and I don't even know what I think till I write. So that tool has definitely helped me more than any other tool. I think maybe the wave tops of abstinence and recovery for me is definitely focusing on that prayer and meditation. The meetings I go to meet, I attend this meeting almost every day, even when I'm traveling. And props to you who are in a earlier time zones. I sometimes am in central time zones, and I do my best to set my alarm and get up and attend these meetings. It's become a really important part. I have face-to-face meetings that I attend. There's two a week in the area that I live, and I'm active in those groups. I connect to people in recovery every day, either calling or texting or even praying about if I know something's going on in someone's life. I genuinely care about other people in recovery and want the best for you too. I do have a food plan. I use, not everyone likes this, but for me it works. Today I use the green, yellow, red food plan. And it focuses on food, but more than that, I also include the green, yellow, red food behaviors, because for me, it's much more about how I eat, not necessarily as what I eat, although what I eat is important, but how I eat too. So I always include those in behaviors in my food plans as well. And I do maintain abstinence. I have been abstinent from a couple of different items for multiple years now, but like I said, my abstinence plan kind of changes over time. So, I guess that's just like life, and it works for me. That's just my way of how I do that. I'm really excited about recovery. Abstinence and food plans and all these things that we talk about, it's not a bad thing. It's an exciting thing. We talk about in this meeting a lot about how abstinence and food plans, that equals freedom. That's not a punishment, that's not because I'm something wrong with me. That's truly my journey to feeling free and being able to live life the best way that I know how. The reason that I keep coming back to OA, and I have for all these years, is this is such a sacred space that I feel honored to be a part of other people's recovery when they share their pain, when they share their experience and their hope and how they deal through things. Thank you, Melissa. I just really feel so blessed to be a part of other people's journey. I feel a part of, all those things that were missing the whole time that I was growing up and constantly seeking out food for my answer. My answer today is living in recovery and living in these rooms. I get to connect with other people who I show so much courage. It blows my mind the things that I hear in these meetings and the support that I get from people. I don't really know a lot of people, but I know who you are. We connect at that spiritual level, and to me, that is such a gift. I'm so grateful to be here, part of this meeting. And again, thank you, Judy, for asking me, and thank you for letting my sh share my experience, strength, and hope. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you so much.